Asa, I have a question for you. How do you know someone is a real Brazilian soccer fan?
Well, that's easy, Michael. I think they have two things. An encyclopedic knowledge of every goal their team has ever scored. And at least one relative who claims they almost went pro.
Imagine a lot of uncles claiming that. That's pretty funny, actually. Today, we have someone who actually lives and breathes Brazilian soccer and can kind of shed some more light on what the culture is like down there. And, you know, he's also a top executive in the sports media industry and can speak a lot to what, you know, the company is doing ahead of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. So welcome to Finance of Football. I'm Michael Leray.
And I'm Asa Pellet. And our guest today is Fabio Sá, the EVP of Global Business at Minute Media, the international digital media company that owns and operates Sports Illustrated, The Players Tribune, 90 Minute, Mental Floss, and Fansided. Oi, Fabio, como vai você?
Oi, Asa. Oi, Michael. I'm so happy to be here. I actually want to meet that guy, you know, somebody who loves football so much and, you know, has a cousin. Actually, it's my brother. My brother always went pro. So, I mean, you guys are absolutely right. I think I checked both boxes.
I mean, we didn't even know about your brother. But I mean, this is my experience living and, you know, traveling back and forth to multiple soccer, you know, matches and also covering a World Cup in Brazil. Every time I meet a Brazilian soccer fan who is introduced to me as like the soccer fan, these were the two characteristics that I think came up the most in the conversation. So where did your brother play?
My brother came. No, not that. No, I mean, he came to the U.S. for university. So he played at Bentley College here, now Bentley University. So he was definitely the best player at home. I say that I was a dedicated number five. You know, I was good in taking the ball away from other people, but I had to give it away. I had to give it to somebody who actually knew what to do with it. And my brother was that person who knew what to do with it, you know. So he was the MVP of every team that he played for. But again, it's the football world, isn't it? 0.01% of the ones who are out there actually make it. So today he's also a great executive in the world of soccer, in the world of football, but not a pro player. Yeah, unfortunately. Maybe we could have been rich. We're not.
And not only that, for those who don't know, like Fabio and I clearly know each other, we're friends, but he's not just a sports executive whose passion is soccer. He is also a diehard Fluminense fan, if you didn't already understand that from our conversation. And in fact, that's why I'm wearing what I'm wearing today. And I'm sure he wishes I gift this or I hand this over to him at one point. Because this is a gift from one of the team's, I would say, biggest stars at one point in the history. This is a gift from Deco, who gave it to me when I went to interview him at the beautiful club headquarters in Laranjeiras in Rio. And I think you really want it, but you're just sort of shy. You don't want to really ask me.
Listen, let me be absolutely honest with you. I also have a Deco signed shirt of my own, so I'm happy that you keep it. Yeah. And let me say something else. Deco, I mean, fantastic player. I love him. But I would say he was probably top five of that team. You know, the 2012 team that we had, Deco was a great player. And when he decided to play in Brazil, he wanted to play in one last team in his life, right? He picked Fluminense. What can I say? He picked the right club. And he was national champion with us. But he was probably the, you know, fourth, fifth best player in that team.
That was the year Fredy came and became a star, and then eventually became part of the Brazilian national team. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, he was with us for a while, but that was the year that he flourished, I would put it like this. He was top one, two in that team, Fred. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I unfortunately don't have a signed Deco jersey, so I don't know if you guys, either you have an extra one laying around and want to send it to me, or are still friends with him and want to get me one. Just saying, you know, then the three of them could have one.
Michael has an impressive collection of jerseys, by the way. If you give him ever his first jersey, and it will be part of an incredible collection, it will literally, I am jealous of Michael's collection at this point. One day we're going to make this compare and contrast kind of game, but I've already seen a lot of his stuff and it's brilliant, brilliant jerseys. I'm admiring your taste and luck finding those jerseys, Michael.
As I sit here in a t-shirt right now, as opposed to a jersey, but I did think it was again, very relevant.
It's not only a t-shirt. Let's be honest, yeah. Let's be fair. You're wearing the t-shirt of, you know, the biggest player of any sport of all times. You know, I mean, Pelé was, you know, I mean, he was, I would say, bigger than the game. I don't even want to get into the discussion about, you know, GOAT or whatever they call it these days, because unless there is another player out there who won 3 World Cups and scored more than 1,000 goals and stopped a war, you know, unless there's another player like that, we shouldn't be having a conversation about this. So I appreciate, Michael, that you're wearing the t-shirt of the one and only king of football.
Yeah. And I love how you go, I don't want to get into any discussions about the GOAT, but if we were, here's his resume and conversation over. GOAT talk aside, you know, we're all so passionate about this sport, about soccer, about football. So I'd love to hear more about just your interest and involvement in the game, especially growing up, obviously a Fluminense fan, and just, you know, how has soccer/football become such an integral, you know, part of your life from childhood to even today?
Of course. But I mean, even before that, let me say that it's an honor and a pleasure to be here. And I love to be having a conversation with the two of you. And I love how you asked me to put all my best clothes on. And I just threw a sports jacket on top of my, you know, one of my Fluminense jerseys, right? Michael, I don't have a collection of, you know, team jerseys, but I do have a vast collection of Fluminense jerseys. I'm not giving you my Deco signed jersey, by the way. This is one of the most beautiful ones that I find. It's a special edition that the club did in 2023, the year that we won the Libertadores. And it's an homage to a great samba composer in Brazil, Cartola. So these are not the colors of the club. These are actually the colors of the samba school. Cartola inaugurated in Brazil called Mangueira. So, I mean, there's so much history. And I think it actually connects to your question, Michael. I mean, I don't know myself without or before the game of football. You know, I was born into football as, I would say, 99.9% of Brazilians. But I would say more than that. You know, my father is a diehard football fan. I would say he's a crazy football fan too, because he used to take his three kids to the Maracanã Stadium every Wednesday, every Sunday, as early as the age of 2 or 3. And honestly, you know, I'm from the 80s and Rio in the 80s. I'm not saying that it's like paradise today, even though it's, you know, in my opinion, it's the most beautiful city in the world. But Rio in the 80s was crazy, man. And going to the Maracanã Stadium with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old at this time of, you know, life, it was absolutely crazy. I wouldn't do it with my kids today, just to be fair. And I'm a diehard fan.
Was it dangerous? What was like?
Super dangerous. Super, super duper dangerous. You know, there were fights out of the stadium, inside the stadium. You know, it was absolutely crazy. And it was not. And again, this is the 80s, Asla. So it's like, it's decades before Brazil hosted the World Cup. So forget about the FIFA standards, right? The stadiums, uh-huh. They were stadiums. They weren't arenas. So you walked into the stadiums, you know, side by side with the opposition. And it's very different than American sport. And on one hand, I think it's beautiful how you can go to an NFL game or an NBA game and just wear a different jersey, you know, and sit beside some, even in Europe, right? You can do that sometimes. In Brazil and in Rio, like, forget about it, right? You have different zones. You cannot go anywhere close to the opposition. And my dad took 3 kids to the game.
You don't go Hendon. I mean, you enter from different doors. Since the
big these
always.
Days, no, in the 80s, we went through the same gates. So I would say that was my character building. You know, I learned how to win. I learned how to lose in the stadium, right? So it's not like I'm Fluminense, Michael. I mean, it's much bigger than that. It's a religion. It's a belief. It's in my values. And it's not only because I'm Fluminense. The same goes for people who are other clubs. You know, it's what they are. It's who they are. And I'd say it's very difficult for you to identify yourself as a Brazilian if you don't have that football culture very much ingrained in your heart and in your brain. I cannot... I don't have any friends who are not crazy diehard fans of football, to be honest.
Well, you took this to an extreme because I think you told me that you flew back to Brazil for a Libertadores game while your wife was 8 months pregnant with twins.
Yes.
And who stayed home. Clearly, she couldn't go with you. I feel like you probably had to pay for that. Or I'm sure she wasn't very happy that you've done that. But also, that was a very important Libertadores, you know, match that I also understand as another soccer fan why you didn't want to miss it and why she probably understood why you weren't there for her. God knows what would happen if she went to birth early, right? To deliver the baby early.
And not only that, we don't have any family here in the States. So she was all by herself here. It's not like, I mean, we're Brazilians living in another country, another continent, right? So, I mean, honestly, it wasn't my proudest moment, but she knows who she married, you know? And
vows, by the way, you were like, if there's ever a big match, like through thick and thin and also, you know, like that.
It comes without saying, man. It comes without saying. She knows who I am, you know? And the long story short of that game, Fluminense was playing Internacional for the first leg of the semifinal. We were playing home at the Maracanã Stadium, and I honestly didn't feel the urge to be there because there were 70,000 fans supporting the team already. So I felt like, I mean, I would, if I wanted to be there, it was more for me than for the club, you know? But when we tied that first game and the way that it was so emotional. We were one player down and we were losing 2-1 and we scored the second goal. I mean, we were dead. And then we were brought back to life with that Cano goal. You know, the Germán Cano scored the 2-2, the equalizer. When he scored that goal, I was absolutely sure that I had to be in the second leg, the away game, because the 4,000 supporters who were going to be there against Inter's 50,000 supporters, we had to make a difference. And we did. To be fair, we were as loud as the 50,000 supporters. And we won that game with a 19-minute winner. And we punched our ticket into the final, not because I was there, but because 3,999 other maniacs were there pushing the team, you know?
So that's the passion that we need to transmit to American soccer fans, perhaps, right? And I think I want to get to that in a little bit about World Cup and stuff. But the fact that you think you're the 12th player, you need to be there when the team needs you the most, not when they don't need you. You have to appear as this, you know, part of the solution to a difficult situation for your team. I think that's what the fandom is all about. And I don't know, Michael, you're such a big fan. You know this feeling from like being a soccer fan all your life. A lot of people, you know, perhaps do not understand that as strongly the way Fabio describes it, I think.
Yeah, I think we have that here in the States, but with other sports, right? Like, I'm sure there's plenty of men who have left pregnant wives at home to go watch the Chiefs in the Super Bowl or the Cowboys back in the 90s in the Super Bowl kind of thing. So it's like, it definitely happens. It's just not in soccer, in football yet. I don't know if there's any crazy MLS fans that have done, hey, we're in the MLS Cup final. Like, I got to do this, that, and the other thing. It's around the holidays. I don't know. But we definitely do have that here, especially in the NFL. And it's just, how do we bring that excitement, that passion into football? Maybe whether it's MLS, NWSL, USL, whatever, or just the international games. But like, you know, it's taking time. It's growing. MLS is celebrating its 30th year this year, which is crazy, which makes me feel old because I remember when the league started and now here we are. But it's just something I have a passion for. Now, would I leave, you know, if I got married and had a wife and stuff, like, would I leave her? I don't know. I'm not saying that you did anything wrong, Fabio, by any means. Clearly, you and your wife are still okay. The kids are fine. There's no issues with that.
This is a no judgment zone. Michael, this is a no judgment zone. No judgment zone, please.
No, there's no judgment. So I get it. But no, it's that level of passion and excitement, which I think I love personally about this sport the most, is that, like, you know, it's priority number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, especially depending where you're from, and especially if you're from Brazil. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, you guys were at a match together, whether by coincidence or on purpose. You
Total
were at an impressive match together, Fla-Flu, I think more than a decade ago, that I think even had some people get some tattoos as a result of that as well. So I'd love to hear about that as someone from afar who certainly wasn't there.
Ashley, you want to tell your side of the story?
Well, my side of the story, and I have many questions, but I want to try to keep it short because I want to hear your side of the story more. So I am in Brazil in 2012 to film my first Fla-Flu. I have been to a Fla-Flu in 2006 at that point for Carnival. 2006-07, that was my first Carnival. I go to Rio. I stayed a little longer, and a friend of mine told me, you have to go see a Fla-Flu if you're a soccer fan. And they told me two things. Do not wear anything nice or particularly you don't want to ever see, because the fans pee in cups and then throw the pee to each other. So the whole time, my first Fla-Flu in 2006, I am like, couldn't watch the game. All I was doing was, where is the pee coming from? How can I avoid the pee? You know, I was so afraid. Nothing happened. I came home all by myself, by the way. All by myself, foreigner, didn't speak Portuguese. 2006 was a total adventure. 2012, I'm now a sports journalist and I do a TV show. I have a crew of four people. We were taken there by the Fluminense fans, who were showing us the ceremony you guys do with the powder, with the farina, with the...
It's called poja ruiz. Yes. It's rice
powder.
Please
tell us the rice. Exactly. I really, perhaps you can explain that better than me to the people who are listening to us. By the way, we're talking to Fabio Sá, who is from Minute Media, but we're deep into this conversation with Fluminense right now. Anyway, and I am there and I'm at awe watching this incredible match. And of course, so much has happened in that, you know, a match. And this was right before I got the jersey, either right few days before when we went to visit the club headquarters. And then to you, like, how did you live that match and where were you? You know, tell me a little bit about what I saw was people pouring flour over each other. And that was part of an old tradition of Fluminense.
Yes. First of all, that's an old tradition. It's one of the most beautiful things in the stadium. And I'm super biased, but yes, it is. But anyway, that game, 2012, just out of context, you know, there are derbies and then there is a Fla-Flu, right? There is no derby in the world like the Fla-Flu, right? People talk about, you know, Liverpool, Everton, Boca, River, whatever. I mean, Fla-Flu comes first and then everything else, right? So that year we were going head to head with Atlético Mineiro for the championship. So we couldn't afford to miss any points, right? So we couldn't tie any game. We had to win every single game. And that game was 0-0 until, you know, almost the end, when in a beautiful play by Deco, he crossed the ball to Fredy, who scored one of the most beautiful volley goals in the history of football. And that goal has been eternalized in the skin of so many Fluminense fans worldwide. Not my case, even though my, you know, 3/4 of my arm is covered in Fluminense, that goal is not on my arm because it's already on everybody else's. So it was a memorable game, and I'm so happy that you were there. And I found out, you know, just a few days ago.
Yeah. When I was trying to tell him, like, when was the last time I was there anyways? But this is what makes football so special, those moments when you witness one of these derby matches and something magical happens, you keep talking about it, not a decade, decades, your children find out about it. It's a little bit like the story that the way we like open this episode, right, Michael? These are magical, like mythical stories that will stay with us forever.
Can I tell you a non-magical, non-mythical story, Michael? Sorry, just because you mentioned the pee cups, you know, again, there's...
I was going to say, we completely just gloss over that. Asa's talking about she's worried about being bombarded with pee cups, and we just talk, and then we just went on. I'm like...
Move to a nice thing.
Does that happen? Like, I need to know these things, you know?
So let's talk about the pee cups. Let's talk about the pee cups.
It didn't happen to me, but it happened to you.
It happened a million times, all the time. I mean, the thing is, think about Brazil as a pre-World Cup and post-World Cup era, right? The post-World Cup Brazil is an arena era where FIFA demanded that the stadiums were rebuilt and everybody, you know, it's like, it's beautiful these days, right? Every big stadium in Brazil, if you close your eyes, you would think you're in Europe, right? Except for the passion, right? I mean, with all due respect to the Europeans, Brazil is so much cooler, right? But the stadium itself, the hardware is there. It's the same. But this is pre-World Cup, right? So pre-World Cup, it was a mess. I love the mess. If you ask me, I'm so much more pre-World Cup than post-World Cup, you know, in terms of passion. But it was a mess. So a very quick, non-magical story. May I? I know, I mean, I do want to talk about business, but...
By all means. Just
because you mentioned the P-Cup. So 2008, we were playing São Paulo at the quarterfinals of the Libertadores. First leg in São Paulo, right? At the Morumbi Stadium. And at the Morumbi Stadium, again, the old stadium, not the arena these days, the stadium, right? There were levels. There still are levels, but they're different these days. So these days, the away fans, they are put all the way to the top, far away from the local fans, okay? Back in the day, in 2008, we sat right underneath the diehard, crazy São Paulo fans. So nobody could step ahead of the covering because you would be covered with pee, right? Because you are right below everybody who hates you, right? So when I got to the stadium, I had this little Fluminense flag that I had. And when I got to the stadium, there were no flags, no Fluminense flags laid out. So when I thought, well, the team is going to come to the field and they're not going to see our flags. So what are they going to think? They're going to think that, you know, we're not strong enough to go out there and put our flags up. So that day, I think I got bombarded with like 100,000 P-cups and bits and everything people threw their moms at me. You know, you have no idea. But my flag was there. And I'm so proud of that moment. It's like, you know, when you think about, you know, people planting the American flag on top of a hill, I was planting my Fluminense flag in the São Paulo Stadium. And after that, I don't know, like 10, 12 people went and did the same. And they were also bombarded with pee. But we don't care. You know, you can wash away the pee, God. But my flag is there. You know, so that's the kind of that. That's a non-magical P-cup story for your records, you know?
No,
and I don't know how I can segue from this to anything else, Michael.
No, I was going to say sorry. Anything that is actually a very magical story. And I love the, you know, I may be bombarded with pee, but my flag was still there. That I think is probably the quote of the century that will live in infamy. And you mentioned the flag. I think of like the Allied soldiers in Iwo Jima. And there's that, like, exactly. They're putting the flag. I imagine that's you and a bunch of other friends with the thing. And just cups of urine are just raining down on you. And you're like, we're doing this for the club. So, you know, that definitely takes a certain dedication to do that. But how could you pass all that up? So you're doing that in Brazil. And then you say, you know what? I've had enough pee on my head. I'm going to move to the United States. So I'd love to talk about how, you know, again, you're so passionate about this club, so passionate about the game. And now they're not in your backyard anymore. So just maybe take us through. What brought you here to the U.S.?
Fantastic. By the way, I've been here for 3 years. Nobody has peed on my head yet. But I mean, we don't know, right? We don't know.
You're going to all the wrong kind of soccer matches.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Wait till the Club World Cup comes in. Maybe P-Cups will be back with it.
And I have so many other questions about this whole just scenario that we'll have to talk offline another time. Just 100%. On the details of how these people do this.
All right, so let's move away from the P-Cups for a second. So yeah, the States, right? So I've been here for 3 years. You know, my family and I, we moved here. I do miss my club and my family and the Maracanã Stadium and the beaches and everything. But honestly, I think that I was very privileged to be working at a company and to be very close to the decision makers of this company, the CEO, the president, the CMO. And I had a conversation with them like 5-6 years ago. What I told them way before the World Cup, way, way, way before Messi, way before, you know, so many of the things that are happening now, what I told them is things are gravitating towards the US. The US is going to become the next center of global football. And it's not going to be about, you know, US soccer and the domestic game. That's going to be a part of it. But it's about how American money is running global football. And that's where I want to be. I want to be there before it, you know, blows up, before it surges, before it becomes obvious. And honestly, I think it's obvious now, but it wasn't obvious like 5-6 years ago. And it only took me a long time to come here because of the visa. My visa took like 2 years to get approved. But once it got approved, you know, I was here on the next flight, right? So I've been here for 3 years. And I think I was very happy with that quote unquote vision. You know, I mean, it was, I knew that it was coming. Lots of other people knew that it was coming, but I knew it so badly. I knew it so hard that I was, you know, willing to change my family's life to come here and try to make something out of the business of soccer here in the US. So here I am.
And that's a bold prediction 5 years, 6 years ago. I think that's incredible, you know, vision that you have. We, you know, I totally agree with you. But for, I have two questions. First, what was Minute Media's strategy or approach to soccer in US was back then when you had that meeting with them, what they were thinking about doing and how you coming to the company impacted the outcome, or perhaps, you know, did it have anything to do with acquiring powerhouse brands like Sports Illustrated or the Players Tribune? How did this Israeli international media company with an incredible focus on research and you know, data is now, you know, acquiring very important brands in soccer? I want to know a little bit of how the sausage is made, if you may, if you can share those details with us.
Of course, of course, of course. And by the way, Minute Media was founded by another diehard fan of the game. You know, Asaf Peled, he's a crazy diehard fan of football, as many other executives in the company, right? So the CMO of the company is a crazy diehard fan of global football. So it's not because of me, and it definitely didn't start with me, right? So it wasn't that hard for them to understand that the business was gonna profit and was gonna be good for the business if I was here, you know, helping to grow soccer in the States. So we were always football. We were football before we were anything else, right? Global football. So the first brand in the company was 19 Min. 19 Min is obviously a global football brand, right? So that's the brand that we have invested, you know, for the last 12 years now. That was once our only brand out there, our only, you know, consumer-facing brand. So as I said, I didn't have to convince anybody about the game, right? I guess it was more of, you know, I had to convince people that I was ready to come here and that we needed to put soccer front and center and make it as much as a priority as other legacy sports here in the States, like, you know, the American football and the NBA, of course. So I would love to say that we acquired companies like the Players Tribune and now the operation of Sports Illustrated because of football. It's not because of football, but definitely football is a major component of it. When you see the stories that we tell, of course, the stories that we tell in any sport, especially when you look at TPT, how we call the Players Tribune, right? They're amazing.
On that website, it's amazing. And I would love to go back and ask you more questions about that. But it's such a great concept, really.
I appreciate you saying that. It's amazing because it's not really about sports. It's about the superhumans and how they're also humans. So the superhumans playing any sport out there, they have a human side that is not shown in traditional media. So that's what TPT is all about. It's about allowing these men and women, you know, who are made of, you know, flesh and bone like you and I, to tell their stories in their way at their own pace. And sometimes they tell their stories and their stories are fantastic, but they're not ready to publish it yet. And we have to respect that. So I can't tell you, but the amount of stories that we have that we didn't publish, wow, because they were not ready to publish. And that's the level of respect that we have for the athletes, right? So just coming back, because of all this passion that there is in football, that there is in soccer, there is a perfect connection, I would say, between all of the brands that we have. From 19 Men, our original brand, to the acquisition of the Players Tribune, which was, you know, I would say only expanded and maximized with global football. And now with Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated has a 70-year-old history that also includes sports, soccer, of course. But we also believe that this is the perfect combination that we can ramp that up a lot with the passion that we also have for the game and obviously with the technology that Minute Media has.
You mentioned Sports Illustrated. I'd love to ask too that, you know, we all know the late great Grant Wall was the U.S. soccer guy in Sports Illustrated, and he did he raised the bar and he was the guy. And I know SI has fallen on some hard times lately in terms of just the product and maybe some of the perception with consumers. So how are you guys just in general trying to change that perception of Sports Illustrated and maybe using soccer as one of those kind of catalysts too, knowing that Club World Cup is this summer and the World Cup is next summer? And it's great, you know, storytelling opportunities for you guys to say, hey, Sports Illustrated is Sports Illustrated, and we're going to deliver it to you, you know, like we have for 70 years or whatever, like you just said.
Fantastic. And I'm so happy that you brought Grant up. I mean, I met Grant at Grant Wall at a SoccerX. I think it was the same one that we met. I was just, you know, arriving in the States, or maybe a year before I got here to the States. It was in Miami. I still am nobody, right? I mean, who am I? Right? If I'm nobody today, who was I 4 years ago, right? And this guy, one of the most prominent journalists, you know, the most prominent journalist in soccer at that time, he dedicated a full hour just to have a conversation with me at this event. You know, I didn't know him. We weren't the operators of Sports Illustrated. I don't think we even had, I mean, we did have the Players Tribune at that time. But again, he sat with me as a fan. So I appreciate that you brought him up, because it's exactly the great example of the legacy that SI brings to the table, right? So what we're doing now, I would say we're growing that. We're expanding that. It's not the reinvention of the wheel, right? SI is probably the most iconic brand in sports journalism there is, definitely here in the States. I would say even globally, maybe, right? When you look at what we've built already together, we've been operating the brand the editorial side of the brand for less than a year, and we're already number one in sports video here in the US, right? We're talking about 1.5 billion video views. We're talking about 90 million users every single day. By the way, 25 million of which are soccer fans, right? I'm sorry to throw numbers here, but I mean, it's just like,
we
right?
love numbers.
It's I'm proud. Numbers I'm proud contact, that, you know, right? 30 something percent of our daily fans go to Sports Illustrated are already soccer fans. They call themselves soccer fans. So we're so proud to be, you know, with a brand like SI in our portfolio, and knowing that we're definitely not starting from scratch. We're picking it up where they already were, right? And even though, yes, they did have their hardships, but again, we're talking about SI here. So the combination of world-class journalism, 70 years of legacy, plus unparalleled access to legends and players on TPT, right? The numbers that I just brought here to the table. I don't want to sell you guys anything, but, you know, I'm so proud of being working here, because, I mean, this is what we were able to put together over the past few years. And when I look at it now, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe we could never dream about this. And now we have in our hands, I'm bullish to say, probably the most powerful combination there is in sports media in the US and probably out there in the world, you know?
That's amazing. So what is impressive numbers? I mean, I think we will sort of reframe this when we're like launching again is a highlight, because I think people should really go back and listen to these numbers. Very important. So what is next for Minute Media toward the World Cup in North America for the 2026? But also 2027, your homeland, the Women's World Cup. So maybe you can, you know, quickly run us through this next two, you know, World Cup cycles for you guys and what's going to look like.
Of course. And again, please shut me up, because I will talk about this for hours, you know, but I'd say that in a nutshell, it's about authenticity, right? It's about, and again, with all due respect to, you know, everybody, I love that everybody's going to talk about the World Cup. I really love it, right? As a fan of the game, I think it's good that, you know, every ship is going to rise with the tide. But I think that there are ships and ships. And I think that we're one of the authentic ships out there, right? There are other authentic ships out there, just to be fair. We're not the only ones. But we have been doing this from our inception, from the inception of 1996, inception of TPT, from the inception of Sports Illustrated. Global football and soccer has always been a priority, right? So what we're doing now towards the road to the World Cup, again, no reinvention of the wheel. It's the combination of these elements that I said. It's a world-class journalism. It's unparalleled access to talent. And I'd say that one of the things that I'm really proud of doing here, of you know, what the team here globally and also in the States does, is we have an open mind to tell good stories. And good stories can involve brands. And I would say that good stories should involve brands in some way, shape, or form, right? So when we work with brands like, you know, endemic brands like EA and Adidas, of course, but also sometimes non-endemic brands like Audi and DoorDash and Body Armor and so many other brands, Hisense. When these brands come to us and when these agencies come to us, they come to us because they want to tell stories. And they like the way that we tell stories, and they like the respect that we have for the games and for the talented, for the athletes. So we're never going to tell a story that won't resonate with a fan. So that's our golden rule. The story has to make sense. If the brand is coming to disrupt the story, it's not a good thing. But the brands knowing that, they come to us because they know that we're going to elevate their stories, or that we're going to elevate their brands through their stories. So I would say, Asla, that the road to the World Cup, as much as the road to everything else that we do, is going to be about doubling down in our beliefs and going in hand with the brands that want to tell the great stories. That's what we do best.
So it's about expanding and, you know, creating content, or like having the right content matching it with the right partner.
Exactly. At the end of the day, I mean, if it doesn't resonate, it's not going to generate the eyeballs. If it doesn't generate the eyeballs and the engagement, it's not a good story. It's not good for anybody, right? It has to be good for the brand, and it has to be good for the fans. Ultimately, if it's not good for the fans, it's not good for anybody.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about the lead up to the World Cup. And I know so many people are obviously bullish on that 2026 in the summer is going to be this huge watershed moment for the sport. But what about afterwards, right? Like, we have Lionel Messi here. A lot of people consider him the GOAT. We all know who your GOAT is. How do we deal with that kind of dip? Because it seems every 4 years, everyone gets so excited, you know, for the World Cup, and it's, oh, now I'm a big fan, and you know, I'm going to follow this person, and now I'm going to follow this team kind of thing. And then there's a dip afterwards. And I know that's probably like the million, if not billion dollar question with soccer in the United States. But how do we keep some of that stickiness, knowing that at some point Messi's going to leave Major League Soccer? Eventually the World Cup is going to end. And then people are going to say, now what? How do we keep it going? We can't launch another men's professional league, even though the USL just announced that. I don't know if we need a third one. But how do we keep that momentum going after, you know, July of 2026, knowing that it's another 4 years until the next Men's World Cup? And guess what? It's not going to be in our own backyard again.
Yes, I agree 100%. And as I said before, Michael, I think that the World Cup, as much as the Copa America and the Club World Cup, they're more the cherry on top than the sundae itself, right? The sundae for me, the cake for me, is how American money is changing global football ecosystem. When you think about what is happening in key centers of football, right? The current champion in Brazil and the current champion of Libertadores is an American club. Botafogo is owned by Eagle Group, by John Textor, who's an American. So it's American money, you know, being champion of the Libertadores, being champion of Brazil. When you look at Italy, American money is running Italy. When you look at the Premier League, oh my God, if American money is out running the Premier League, who is, right? So honestly, today, there are two, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, but just answering the question, the way that I humbly see it is there are two owners of global football today, American money and sovereign Arab states money. Those are the two owners of global football when you put it like, you know, when you take it down to a nutshell. Of course, there's the exceptions. There's the Real Madrid's, and you're on the Bundesliga, right? But honestly, the American money is running the global football machine. So after the World Cup, this is still going to be out there. So what I think is happening now is over the next 15 months, 18 months, there's going to be an acceleration of business that will take everything to a new plateau. And I agree with you. There won't be another peak anytime soon, but the plateau is completely different. So when you look at the MLS and the NWSL, their plateau is already very much different than what it was 5 years ago. And as a fan, as I am of you know, your podcast, you guys were talking about this just a couple of episodes ago, how the NWSL is in a very much different level today, how the MLS is in a very much different level today. Who could imagine that one of the 15 most valuable clubs in the world would be an American club, you know, over $1 billion? So I think what's happening now is really raising the tide. And after the World Cup, it's going to be about how can American money capitalize in the American market, right? Because honestly, there's no more Liverpool jerseys to be sold in Liverpool. There's no more Milan jerseys to be sold in Milan. So they have to sell jerseys here in the States. They have to do broadcast deals here in the States. They have to play, you know, the games here. So what Relevant is doing, for example, bringing the Champions League final to the States, that's it. That's the next level of what football is going to be about here in the States, in my humble opinion. And that's the new plateau that I'm expecting after summer of 2026.
Amazing. And I guess you're not just talking about it or working in a company, you're also investing in soccer personally. I know that you launched your newsletter, The Soccer FC. You also invested in Footmesa. So clearly, this is not only about being bullish about what's happening outside of your door, as if, you know, like you're observing, you're actually trying to also invest in properties that you can control and then grow it together. Maybe briefly, we can touch upon those two properties that you invested and why. And then I guess, I mean, this could be a three-part episode with everything we have to talk about, but we have to slowly perhaps let you go and have a life with your family on an off day.
This is your very, very kind way of telling me to shut up because I talk so much. So I appreciate that.
No, I feel like it's not you, it's not me, but I know our producer is going to look at the time of this episode and look at me like, you're supposed to keep it at 25 minutes, Asa. And then Michael is going to be like, she talks all the time and I'm going to get the boot. So
it's my fault.
Not you guys, it's my fault.
See, she's thrown me under the bus already. Like, geez.
First of all, thank you for the opportunity of talking about, you know, my life outside of Minute Media. As I said, I'm super proud and super happy to be an executive at Minute Media. I love what I do. I love the people I work with. And I'm at the right place at the right time, right? I just think that there's an opportunity, especially being here in the US and super open, super transparent, of doing more, going above and beyond, right? So what I do after I you know, close my notebook at Minute Media is I am an investor in these two companies. As you said, one I started myself. It's called the Soccer FC. It's a very small hobby of mine that I would say I love writing. And I write about the business of soccer. So I started writing about the business of soccer the minute I arrived here in the States. And it's picked up. And now we have a few followers. And I've hired from my own pocket a few people to help me write it. Because honestly, there's not enough hours in the day. You know, and on top of everything, I have two twins that I have to tend to. Plus my beautiful 14, soon to be 14-year-old daughter that I have to take care of too. So anyway, the Soccer FC is my LinkedIn page, also my newsletter. If anyone is interested in the business of soccer, please follow it and subscribe to our newsletter. And Futmesa is a passion. I don't know if you ever heard of Futmesa. Michael, I talked to Asla about Futmesa. Have you ever heard about Futmesa, Michael?
I was checking it out before you came out here today.
All right. So yeah. Futmesa is the love child of foot volley and table tennis. It's foot volley played on a table. It's fantastic. It's what saved me during the pandemic. I didn't go crazy because I had a Futmesa table at home. I played with my life partner, my wife, and she beat me so badly so many times. It's so plastic. It's beautiful. No injuries. So, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful games there is out there. And we became investors and partners of Futmesa here in the States because there is an opportunity of growing the game here through everything that's happening in this country. So, yeah, I'm proud of, you know, walking the talk with a little bit of time and a little bit of money that we have to invest in what we can.
I can't wait to play this. By the way, we should throw away, like, if we ever hang out again, all of us, we should do a Futmesa session. It looks very hard, by the way. I don't know if I can manage. I don't know, Michael, what did you think of when you saw, like, the hardship level? Is it something you can get around and play against Fabio?
Yeah, no, probably not. I don't think my knees or my ego could handle it. So that's why I stick to just golf these days.
I'm sure you could. I'm sure my wife and I could help you and we would have a lot of fun. That's we actually say Futmesa's slogan is have fun like a pro because, you know, the Neymars and Thiago Silva, these guys play Futmesa at home as much as you can play with Miz at home too. So it's like, have fun. Have fun like a pro. That's what we say.
You know, now the bar is even higher than you and your wife. We're thinking about Neymar. Like how I'm going to have fun the way he does. I don't know, but I will do my best. This was a great conversation. Thank you so much, Fabio. Thanks for sharing your insights, your time, and also being a listener. Thank you for the feedback you're giving to this podcast and supporting us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was easy, super conversational. I've been a fan of the two of you since the day I actually knew of your existence, you know, from past lives. So I'm so happy and honored to be here. And yeah, let's keep pushing. Let's take this beautiful game as far as we can. Let's take it to the next level.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to do, right? Is just kind of spread the good word and, you know, just show people why we care about this game so much. And obviously, you know, I wanted to run through a wall hearing your stories and the two of you at the Fla-Flu game and running around trying to avoid pee and all that stuff. So it's like, it's only in soccer, only in football do we get that. And it's called a beautiful game for a reason, you know, minus the urine. So.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Awesome.
And that's it.
Go ahead, guys. Okay, I'll go. And that's a wrap for this episode of Finance of Football. Huge thanks to Fabio Soff for joining us this episode. And, you know, shout outs to our producer, Ethan Joseph, for making us sound good every week. And social media producer, Louis Yo, for his clever take. So thanks for tuning in.
Thanks. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.